And Laura Lee, she's with us as well. What does that mean? It's Friday. It's Friday in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and Big Noon Sports is on the road, as we will be every Friday to the end of the football season, as we warm up for tomorrow's game. Ole Miss coming in Alabama, getting a lot of play. And I think we're going to have a similar game that we've seen in the past. Ole Miss and Alabama will shoot it out. And I said 40-30 earlier today. Did you make your prediction on the Tide website?
I did.
Of course you did.
What is it? It's a high-scoring affair, and I don't exactly what I remember. I think I said 42-34 Alabama. 42-34 Alabama. What do you think about that, Laura Lee?
Yeah.
Might be a little high.
Just like me. That's a joke.
Let me assure you, I rode from Birmingham with him. That is a joke.
But I'm not that far away. I was thinking more along the lines of maybe 34, 27, maybe a little bit less.
Matt, how about you?
I said 40-30. I don't know why. Just when the station sent me my request, I said, okay.
And
that sounds good.
My comment that I added was, I think Jalen Milroe is going to account for 5 touchdowns. I think he's going to play really, really well. Now that Nick Saban has come out and said he is our guy, win or lose moving forward, essentially, he's our guy. He's our guy for the rest of the season. And he told ESPN yesterday that that the reason that Jalen didn't play against South Florida was because he promised Tyler Buchner and Simpson that they would each have a chance. And they got their chance, and they did not seize the opportunity, to put it mild. And so this is Jalen Milroe's team, for better or worse, going forward. And I think that is going to give him a lot of confidence. He's not going to be looking over his shoulder every time he makes a bad throw, a bad read, throws a pick, whatever. Good, bad, indifferent. He is Alabama's quarterback. And that has got to, for, look, you have to remember, these are young people we're talking about. And when you don't feel like you have the confidence of your head coach, you're going to struggle. Why? Because you're going to press. You're going to try to do things you can't necessarily do. And I think that is the main reason why Nick Saban came out on Monday in a very uncharacteristic fashion and said, Jalen has earned the right to be the starter. Well, he earned that right by standing on the sideline. Okay. There's a little gymnastics of logic going on there, but I get what he's saying. And one, he acquitted himself very well on the sideline. He was Jalen Hurts-like in being supportive of his teammates. He wasn't sulking. He was a great cheerleader, a great teammate, and I think that showed a lot of character from him, and maybe that's exactly what Nick Saban wanted to see. And moving forward, I mean, look, we've talked about this, that Nick Saban always says, well, the team will decide who the quarterback is, right? You got to win the team over. That didn't happen this time. And Nick Saban, he reserves the right to be judge and jury here. And he has come out and said, Jalen's our guy. And I think that is absolutely the right move. He gives them the best chance to win. And I expect that they are going to tailor the offense now more to Jalen's strength. Don't have him drop back to pass on 2nd and 5 and stay in the pocket. Don't have him drop back to pass on 3rd and 5, stay in the pocket like we saw. They're going to move him around. I think, look, he's a dynamic athlete, and I think he probably is the best running quarterback that Nick Saban has had since he's been in Tuscaloosa. Overall, I know that's saying a lot. Laura Lee, who's better?
Jalen Hurts.
He's a better running. No, no.
Well, Jalen Hurts is beloved in this town, and he got better, obviously, as things went along. But I also think that he's a great role model for Milroe and what he did. And you only saw it, I saw it a couple of times on TV, the cameras were so bad.
Well, it's because they got lightning
and all that. You couldn't see. You only caught a couple of glimpses of Jalen Milroe cheering the team on. And that was a good thing that he did, and I think it indeed showed character, and maybe the fact that the team was behind him, but Saban sat him down. And everybody did.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that that is a possible reason or explains why Alabama was so flat last Saturday? Because there was some division in the locker room over who should be the starting quarterback?
Possibly.
I think that's a big possibility.
Seems like that should have been vetted out a long time ago. Why do you get 2-3 games in the season and you're still having this problem? I mean, you had these guys in the spring. Milroe's been there for a long time. I'm still perplexed, and I know he gave his reason. But game's tied at 3. Don't you put your best quarterback in there? I'm still perplexed. That wasn't a good enough reason for me.
Well, sorry. I also think
I know Nick's listening right now. He's having, what is it, turkey salad, something that he eats every
turkey
day?
He needs to come here in a sour container.
Yeah, same thing every day.
Every day.
Well, I do think that Jalen did a great job, and maybe he did send a little bit of a message to do better because of the picks from Texas, but if the OC doesn't. He's got to call plays designed for Milroe, and we have not seen that.
Exactly.
And that's what we have to see, some misdirection. They need to up the tempo. They need to call designed runs. They need to play a Jalen Hurts offense for Milroe.
Yeah, and Laura Lee, don't you think that this game is almost as much about Tommy Reese as it is Jalen Milroe?
100%.
That's a great point.
100%. I know during our last weekend and our family text that we were going, you know, texting through the games, it's like, is Reese going to be one and done? I mean,
he's looked a little outmatched so far, and the images overwhelmed. Yes, and the images you see of him in the press box are not good.
No,
he's got his head in his hand. Oh no, that's not a confidence builder.
But again, you got to go back and look who Alabama's had in that position for the last 6-7 years. Lane Kiffin, former head coach USC. Steve Sarkisian, former head coach USC. Washington, Bill O'Brien, former head coach at Penn State and former head coach of the Houston Texans. Like, these are high caliber guys who have called plays at the highest of levels and have a tremendous amount of experience. And now we have a 33-year-old kid. In my view, sorry, I'm old, but a 33-year-old kid calling the plays. and I'm not saying he's not capable, but it has just been.
I think it's been confusing
because Jalen Milroe's skill set is so different than Buckner and Simpson, right? And it's almost like they were trying to run the offense for Buckner and Simpson, and not Jalen.
So now
you have to tailor everything to his skill set, to Jalen's skill set, and I think they will. I mean, and I also firmly believe that Nick Saban has been more involved this week in the offensive game planning than he has in recent memory. Because you've got to remember that Nick Saban still views himself as a quarterback, still high school, really great high school quarterback.
He played at a much larger school and probably been very, very successful.
He can still spin it. He's about to be 72, and he can spin it pretty good.
Well, and also I think as when you're playing two quarterbacks and you have two vastly different quarterbacks, and let's just say that Buckner and Simpson are very much alike and you're designing two different offenses, well, then you're going to lose because you need to be designing one offense.
And have the other one assist, like in the case of Robbie Ashford.
That's correct.
At Auburn.
That's correct.
On the other side, I want to talk to Laura Lee about this, the collective mood of the fan base. Because when I was on campus on Tuesday and speaking with my students and others, I was sort of shocked at just everything and everything I heard.
Were they like Eeyore?
The demeanor.
No.
Is that how I talk about Nebraska?
No. Well, not their volleyball team.
Volleyball Anderson. Undefeated, baby.
Oh.
National
Jamie is our server. If you can get our attention, we need fried pickles, okay? You want some more fried pickles?
Absolutely.
I'm also looking at the NS-free Irish pub menu. They got like 7 or 8 different kind of hot dogs. I'm a hot dog guy. I might have to take myself out to the ball game after we get off the air. Come see us. We're at NS-free right here on University in downtown Tuscaloosa as we're rolling some Tide and getting ready from Ole Miss. Come by and have lunch with us. Back in a flash.
Your business. Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather. A warm afternoon, the sky partly to mostly sunny, the high 85. Fair tonight, the low 63. Tomorrow, a sunny, warm day, the high 87. And Sunday, partly sunny, a few spots could see a passing afternoon shower, the high 86. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 84 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
NS-free on just absolutely Tuscaloosa Chamber of Commerce. Beautiful afternoon. It's like 82 degrees and partly sunny and humidity's down. So, hey, good time to go grab lunch. We got the meat and three, the lucky lunch right here at NS-free. And in addition to that, they got burgers, they got beers, and some fried pickles, which we'll have some in just a minute. By the way, as you heard at the top of the hour, really cool promotion that Tide 100.9 is doing, and it's the cash code for $30,000. Just go to the Tide app at 100.9 and enter this hour, 267, for your shot at winning $30,000. It'd be a nice way to spend the fall, wouldn't it? We also can take calls. You can also come up here to the stage where we are. Just ask a question to us as well. But we take calls at 205-342-9904. And that's what we're going to do. We'll take a call from Joseph. Joseph, welcome to the show. Big Noon Sports.
How y'all doing, man?
Yeah, about great. To eat.
I'm doing good. Well, I'm
going
to be honest with you. If what I heard is true, I don't know if it's true or not, but I think it's not good if it's true. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
I heard down there at University of South Florida that the players didn't want Jalen Miller to start, and he didn't start. So they didn't halfway play like they should have because they wanted Jalen Miller to start. And so I don't know how true that is, but and on the second thing is, you know, I heard Connor, a guy in a sports anchor, Shane Connor, talking yesterday. He kind of just said, you know, Jalen Miller, he'll win you some games. And I totally agree, Jalen Miller will win some games. But he says that he don't think he's the quarterback to take Alabama to the promised land. I said, I absolutely agree with that. I don't think he is. I think eventually Alabama's going to have somebody else in there if they want to go to the promised land. But I don't think he's that guy. But, I mean, that's just because, I mean, if you put Tyler Buckner, Eli Host, or anybody else in there, it's a sad waiting to happen. And, I really do believe that, and from the insider source that I heard on Ryan Fowler's show, yesterday, that they said, Dylan Lauder can daggum quite out so throw the football. They said the
I think we've all heard that. Yeah. I think we've all heard that, but our resident,
the true
Red
freshman
elephant.
Who will save the day. I've never heard that one before.
You know, they were saying the same things about Jalen Hurts too. And he wasn't the guy to lead them, but what did he turn out? Okay, national championship.
They're
right.
Nope. Jalen Hurts won that championship.
What's that?
Starting quarterback for the every game of the season on a team that won the national championship.
Yes, Jalen Hurts won a national championship. Don't be ignorant.
He won
a
national championship.
Well, that's
all right. Okay, see you later, Joseph. Have a great day. Have a fried pickle on me.
And
do you agree? No. Did Jalen Hurts win a national championship or not?
Yes, and so did Tua.
Okay. Yeah.
They're national championship winning quarterbacks.
So did the backup left tackle.
Yeah.
I think he was on that team.
Well, and we were just that one play away the last second of the game against Clemson down in Tampa.
You want to talk about the pick play? You want to talk about the pick play?
Oh, God.
Hunter Renfro,
we got
the Alabama killer.
We got him back on that pick play, but in another game. But I remember when Jalen Hurts scored, and it was, what, a minute and a half or two to go, and I looked at my husband, and I said, he scored too soon.
Yeah, I agree.
We gave him too much
100%.
Time. 100%. That was a dreadful trip.
The best smile of the Nick Saban era, though, was against Clemson and the onside kick. What a canary swallowing smile that was.
What a brilliant call.
That won the game.
It
gave Alabama an extra possession. It was coaching that won that game. Nick Saban won that game.
And that smile
was the best.
Oh, yeah.
My kids. Order up. Yeah, that may have been, as a coach, his crowning moment. I think it's just, you know, what you send in, what you call. But somebody had been in that film room, and somebody picked that up. It may have been Nick.
It was Nick.
It was Nick that picked it up where he could actually pop it up.
Yeah, because he noticed it on film how the Clemson front line on kick return, they started running back before the ball was even kicked. They turned their heads, and it created an opening there for Marlon Humphrey, and it was a perfect onside kick.
Yes.
Absolutely perfect. And just Marlon Humphrey caught it in stride.
It was a very cool moment.
Speaking of Marlon Humphrey, right, he's hurt right now for the Baltimore Ravens, but I would argue that he's the best corner in the league. And he's come out and said that essentially the dynasty is over. And Marlon Humphrey is not someone who is prone to overstatement. He's usually quite measured and analytical in his assessment of the state of Alabama football. Did you see that, Laura Lee? And this sort of raises the point that I wanted to make and ask you. When I was on campus on Tuesday talking to people, talking to my students, it's not even despondence. It is just a lack of really caring. Like it is a feeling, a collective group feeling that I'm picking up on from Alabama fans that I have not sensed since I moved here since Nick Saban was hired. It's just this idea that I don't know if we're gonna be able to compete against Ole Miss.
Well, what was the quote you gave me on the way over here? Don't know if you're going to win another game this year?
Yeah, Nick Saban said something to that
effect. We would all agree that this has been the most un-Nick-like season since he's been at Alabama. What's your feel on just the emotion of this campus, Larley?
Well,
Larley Thompson, Bama broker.
I agree. I think the challenge here is there's been no direction with the offense. There's no clear straight path, if you will. And when people see that lack of leadership on the offensive line, who's the quarterback, there doesn't seem to be any clear path. Now, he said it straight. Melrose, the quarterback, here's what we're going to do. And, you know, if we go out there, and I never say if, but I'm saying if we go out there and win this game, I think all of that will turn around.
So even with your language, you are expressing skepticism.
Of course.
I mean, there's a lot of evidence. What else can you assume based on the last two performances of this team?
Well, you look at...
You could be looking for answers.
Yeah, you've got an offensive genius, maybe one of the best on the other side, and you know he's going to do the same thing we saw Sark do a couple of weeks ago. And
boy, that would be quite the double whammy, wouldn't it? I didn't even think of that. Sark and Kiffin within 3 weeks.
We'll throw Jimbo in there down the line.
Well,
but especially Sark and Jimbo, because they were so instrumental in building up the whole dynasty.
Well, Sark and
Sark and Lane were, yes.
Yeah. So, and, I mean, they were offensive and still are, in my opinion, great play callers. They can design these plays, and we have not seen that on our side yet. And let's hope it's a yet.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot to talk about with Mike Rodak.
AL.com. Mike Rodak is absolutely. He's moved,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he moved from AL.com. He's at 24/7 Sports.
And he's just going to take a big stick to me one day because I've done that like 2 weeks in a row. My apologies.
He covers Alabama football as well as anyone on the beat. And there's a lot of good people. But Rodak is in the short conversation of the best, in my opinion.
When we get to a midweek a week on kind of a slow day, we ought to dive into that. Because there have been an extraordinary number of talented writers covered the University of Alabama.
Yeah.
I mean, and had chances to go on. Cecil's a great example.
Yep.
He had chances to go elsewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Fried pickles are here. We got a break. No, we will be back with Mike Rodak from 24/7 when we get back as you listen to us live from Innisfree. Come have some lunch and some fried pickles with us.
SEC Sports, like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is Big Noon Sports. Matt Coulter, Lars Anderson, Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker, is with us. And so is Mike Rodak from 24/7 Sports, and he's going to join us here right away as a beat writer, University of Alabama. Hey, Mike, how are you, first of all? Good day?
Yeah, feeling pretty good. Just fighting off a little bit of an illness. It feels like you start getting into the season and the weeks and the days move pretty quickly and you get beat up pretty quickly. So hanging in there, 5 weeks, 4 weeks away.
Yeah, you know there's a law in the state of Alabama that sports reporters just can't take off during football season. So be it sick or not or broken bones, you gotta play hard. You gotta play tough. Mike, did Nick say anything last night or yesterday on McAfee's show that, I don't know, got your attention?
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole issue of Jalen Milroe and what exactly happened where, you know, you go from Milroe starting the first two games and then Tyler Buckner starting, you know, the third game. And Milroe not even being the backup for that game, being the third quarterback, and Ty Simpson being the backup, and then going back to Milroe being the starter and having Ty Simpson back him up. And I think, you know, what's happened the last 3 weeks with a lot of different quarterback movement has confused people. And so he's addressed it. You know, I don't know if he's fully, you know, gotten into an explanation that will satisfy people, but you know, I even asked him after the game on Saturday. I said, you know, why was it Buckner and Simpson and not Milroe? And he said it was an internal team thing. And then you get to Thursday, you know, on the McAfee show, and he says that we went into the game, the South Florida game, saying that we wanted to play somebody else, and that's what he told Jalen Milroe. And he said maybe it would be for a quarter or whatever, and it sounded like maybe the plan was to play Milroe at some point in that game, but from everything Saban said on the McAfee show, it doesn't sound like Milroe handled that situation well. And so then Saban also talked to, you know, ESPN, Chris Lowe on Thursday, and then he said to ESPN, he said, the plan all along was I promised the quarterbacks, all three of them, I was going to give them playing time at some point this season, and so I was following through on that promise. So trying to parse all that and figure out what exactly happened. I mean, Buckner and Simpson already got playing time. They got a drive in the opening game. It wasn't a ton. My best read on it is Saban thought that it wouldn't matter against South Florida who the quarterback was, and he might as well get a look at Simpson and Buckner while he still could. And obviously it did not go very well. The game was closer than it should have been. And obviously that leads you back to Jalen Milroe, but I don't think he necessarily was thrilled with the way Jalen Milroe played against Texas either with the interception. So at this point, he's their best option, but you know, the story hasn't been completely straight from Saban on it.
Mike, I agree with you 100%. You know, I've embedded with different teams before for a week or a month or even a full season. And I've seen when locker rooms kind of go south, right, that the collective attitude is not great. And within about 4 or 5 minutes of watching of game time, of watching that game on Saturday, I told my friend who was watching the game with, there's something going on in the Alabama locker room, because the lack of effort is stunning. It's apparent, and it's unprecedented, frankly, in the Nick Saban era. And I know you don't, I'm guessing you don't have answers to, you know, the question of what's going on with this team, but doesn't it just feel as if something is off? Like something's just not right with this team?
I agree. And, you know, I agree that, you know, and I've covered teams like this where, you know, there's been changes at quarterback and, there's certain sides that are taken and, you know, it's never a good thing when there's a players only meeting. I mean, I've covered teams.
Yes.
And they've had players only meetings, and that was something Tyler Booker brought up on Monday. So I guess it's good that they had it, but it's not good that they were in a spot where they felt like they needed to have it. And you know, there's smoke, I would say, to the idea that, Milroe was well liked in the locker room and is well liked. And there might have been players that were kind of on his side on, you know, why am I being benched this week? And that could have led to problems, you know, in the South Florida game. You know, we've even heard the word favoritism used by J.C. Latham, that they're not going to show favoritism to, you know, a single quarterback. And that was kind of something he brought up on his own, which, you know, sometimes is a telling sign that it was an issue. So they're walking a very fine line and talking about it. You know, Tyler Booker, when he was talking about the players only meeting, said coming out of it, they felt like they were more together and they were on the same page. And he kind of added, oh, you know, I'm not saying we weren't together before. In some ways you are. Like, I don't think he wants to come out and say that, but, obviously I think, you know, anybody can kind of read between the lines and see that there was some level of division, with the team and presumably about the quarterback situation.
So one of the things that Coach Saban has made an effort doing is hiring coaches that are younger, and that those younger coaches would be able to relate to the players in a way that he might not be able to because of the age difference. Do you think that's helped or hindered?
So it's interesting because they've gone different directions on both coordinator spots, where last year you had a younger defensive coordinator in Pete Golding who really got along with players. You know, I remember talking to players at the Combine, you know, NFL-bound players last year who essentially were saying, you know, Pete's like a brother to us. He's not even like a coach. And even, you know, this past week asking guys about Pete Golding, who's, you know, going to be on the other sideline for Ole Miss, they're saying, you know, great guy, great dude. And you can kind of sense that, you know, a younger coach they're going to relate more with. And then last year they had Bill O'Brien, who's a little bit of an older coach on offense and a little bit more of a hard line type of guy who might, you know, yell at you and get in your face a little bit. And I don't know if players related to him as much. But then it completely flipped this offseason where on offense they went to Tommy Reese, who's younger, and you hear, I think even back in the spring, Ja'Cory Brooks saying he's kind of hip. But then defensively, they went from Pete Golding to Kevin Steele. Kevin Steele, 65 years old. And I don't think, you know, necessarily relates to players quite as well. So they've been on both sides of it. Last year was, you know, older on offense, younger on defense. This year it's flipped. I don't know if one is necessarily better than the other. I think sometimes it's just based on where you are as a team. Yeah, I think Tommy Reese is still relatively inexperienced. I think this is obviously a tough situation for him with the quarterbacks that he has. He'd probably be better off last year with the Bryce Young, to, you know, to play with. But that just is what it is. I don't know if it's a huge factor in everything that's happened, but it's probably part of it.
Is there more pressure on the OC at Notre Dame or the OC at Alabama?
You know, I would say Alabama, because Notre Dame, I don't know if Marcus Freeman has gotten to the status that Nick Saban has. So, people I think are more willing to point fingers at Marcus Freeman because he hasn't accomplished a ton as a coach, whereas Nick Saban has 6 national titles at Alabama. And whenever something has gone wrong the last few years, I think people are not going to point at Nick Saban quite as much as they will coordinators. So, it directs a lot of that pressure on, your offensive coordinator in this case. And I think a lot of people also look at it as Nick Saban's a defensive coach. And so he's not nearly as involved in the offense. I think 80-20, I think, is what he described his involvement in, defense versus offense. And so this is kind of Tommy Reese's baby. And so there's probably more pressure on him from that standpoint too. People kind of looking at it saying he's responsible for anything that's happening on the offensive side. Whereas on defense, it's more of a joint thing between Saban and Kevin Steele and maybe Travaris Robinson too.
Mike, so many people are talking about, and as we've mentioned on the show, that the offense really needs to be tailored to the strengths of Jalen Milroe. How much can the offense really change in 7 days?
Not much, and I think there's still hesitance to do that, because keep in mind, Jalen Milroe's first year, 2021, he played a little bit behind Bryce, non-conference games that were out of hand, and they basically just ran a read option type of offense. I mean, he didn't throw the ball a whole lot. It was a lot of quarterback either design runs or option runs with him, and the talk from that point and really through that offseason and the second offseason was he needs to get better as a thrower. And ultimately, I think that's still what Nick Saban wants to do offensively, is be able to throw the ball, be able to stress defenses down the field, be able to use speed at wide receiver. And if you tighten things up and run an offense that has a lot of those design runs and you're triple option or your read option with the quarterback a lot, the defense is going to creep up and they're going to be able to stop that. And there's just not a lot of examples of high level success in college football in recent seasons with teams doing that. And I think Saban knows that if you're going to try to win a national championship this year, which right now, the odds are stacked pretty deeply against them, you're going to have to do it throwing the ball. And, Milroe's been good throwing the ball deep. I mean, there's been some success against Middle Tennessee and Texas where Milroe actually had more downfield passes, of 15 or more yards than Texas did in that game. But it was some of the shorter stuff, the intermediate stuff, where he made the bad decisions, the interceptions, things didn't go as well. And I think that's where Saban wants to clean things up. But I don't know if he's going to just shift towards an offense that is running Jalen Milroe 15 times a game.
Well, you look at Lane Kiffin and the Ole Miss quarterback, Jackson Dart, and you look at an offense that perhaps should be running at Alabama. It's the same type of success that Lane had here, being able to design plays. So having said that, do you think that Dart is going to have that success against our defense?
I think it's possible. I don't know if there's as many weapons for Ole Miss as Texas had with Xavier Worthy at wide receiver and, Adonai Mitchell, and then their tight end, Jatavion Sanders. Like, Texas has better receivers than Ole Miss does. But I think Ole Miss, even though they're an up-tempo, they're going to run plays fast like Tennessee does, South Florida just did last week, they're still going to run the ball a lot. And they were one of the best running teams, not even just better, but best running teams in the country last year. They've had an issue with injuries this year offensively. Quinshon Judkins, who's really the top running back, has been hurt or not 100%. And so Zach Evans has actually been better for them. But both of those guys, I think, are the key to the offense for Ole Miss at running back. And, Alabama's been good in run defense so far this year. I don't know if they've really seen much of a test there. You know, Middle Tennessee State runs an air raid offense. They're not going to run the ball very much. Texas, you know, I think tried, but they don't have Bijan Robinson. So this will be really the biggest run defense test that they've had so far. And, you know, if Ole Miss is able to kind of get that going, I don't know if they'll need Dart quite as much, but there's certainly the possibility that they can run. And then it's a case of how Dart can do with, you know, a good receiver group, not great, against Alabama's secondary, and if Lane can scheme anything open. But I don't think the threat of the passing game is quite as high with Ole Miss as it was with Texas.
What's going to be the end result tomorrow? We're going to ask Mike Rodeck that question as we continue to broadcast live. We're at Innisfree on University Boulevard. Got the fried pickles going. Come by, have a cold beer, have a burger, have some fries. I got a great selection of hot dogs, so I'm going to carry one of those out of here today. So come join us as we broadcast Big Noon Sports until 2 o'clock from Innisfree. It's the place to be.
Weekday mornings at 6 a.m., The Martin Houston Show.
Join us on Monday as Kimpton Smith III of The Athletic joins us to talk about whether Bama was able to right the ship. We'll talk about the good, the bad, the ugly versus Ole Miss. We'll preview Mississippi State. And after the game, was there Miro or no to Miro? We'll talk about it on Monday.
Catch the Martin Houston Show from 6 to 7 weekday mornings on Tide 100.9.
Get ready. Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at LauraLee@TheBamaBroker.com. That's LauraLee@TheBamaBroker.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather. A warm afternoon, the sky partly to mostly sunny, the high 85. Fair tonight, the low 63. Tomorrow, a sunny, warm day, the high 87. And Sunday, partly sunny, a few spots could see a passing afternoon shower, the high 86. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 83 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
We are live at Innisfree. It's a place to be on a beautiful Friday afternoon and tonight and tomorrow. And if you don't have tickets to the game, here's a place to come watch it. So please drop by and see us and have some lunch today. Lars Anderson, Laura Lee, and myself, Matt Coulter, will be here until 2 o'clock.
Mike, what is your sense for how Alabama is going to come out and play? I know it's impossible. We don't have crystal balls, but my feeling is that they're going to come out and play very, very well tomorrow. How about you?
I mean, I thought that for the South Florida game too, coming out of the Texas game, and for whatever reason they didn't. And I remember asking players after that game Saturday, like, you know, why wasn't it good coming out of the gate? Like, everybody knew you kind of need to prove something after Texas, and they're like, it could have been the weather, different stadium, whatever. I guess none of those factors will really be at play for this game. Like, you can't say it's a road environment or a different city or the weather's different or it's hot outside. Like, there's not going to be any excuses from that standpoint. But you know, I think from an effort standpoint, I think it would be good. Like, I think this is going to be a motivated team to show that they're better than what they've shown you know, the last 2 weeks, especially last week. But I think there's still questions about the ceiling of what this team can do offensively and what they can do defensively as well. It's, you can play hard, you can try hard, you can have the right mindset, you can execute well, but sometimes you might not be the better team. And I'm not 100% convinced right now that they're the better team than Ole Miss. I wasn't convinced going into the Texas game that they were the better team than Texas. Like I said, I think Ole Miss probably lacks some of the weapons that Texas does, but overall they're still a good team. And, you know, it's going to take a really clean game from Jalen Milroe if he starts throwing interceptions again. That's going to put them behind the eight ball. I mean, the defense is going to need to play a very good game. They're going to need to run the ball better. So if they can do everything better, then I think they can win the game. But my sense, my feeling coming into it is I truly don't know what's going to happen. And that's different from covering this team for 4 years before this. And this could very well just be the feeling of this season. I mean, maybe there's a lot of confidence going to the Mississippi State game next week, but you go right down the line with Texas A&M and Arkansas and Tennessee and LSU. Like, every single game walking into that stadium, I am not going to know how this team is going to perform. And I think that's particularly true for this Saturday.
Well, when you look at the offensive line on both sides, Ole Miss and Alabama, neither one have been very good. Now, Ole Miss can cover it up somewhat with the play calling and the tempo. But when you look at that, don't you think if Alabama can straighten out their line and get some production there, that it will be a different game?
Yeah, I mean, left tackle is the spot where it needs to be a lot different. You know, and Nick Saban said this too, where you can have everybody do something right. You know, 10 guys do something right on offense, but if your 11th guy doesn't, then the entire play gets blown up. And quite frankly, I think he was referring a little bit to the left tackle spot, and there was plays with Caden Proctor where he was just getting flat out beat, you know, off the snap, and that blew up anything that, you know, Ty Simpson in particular was trying to do, especially off his blind side there. So, yeah, if they can get Proctor to take a huge step forward in this game, then that does allow them to try to run their offense and not, you know, be behind the sticks or, you know, be in situations that I think are going to be really tough for Jalen Milroe. So that's part of it. I think running the ball too much, and this is an offensive line that just on paper, based on where they were recruited, just their pure talent, this offensive line should be dominating defensive lines, especially, you know, Tyler Booker and J.C. Latham. I mean, Caden Proctor, in terms of his size, should be a great run blocker. And if they can get that going a little bit more than it has, and it was, you know, it was up and down against South Florida. The running game was not good in the first half. There's a lot of negative runs and no gain and short gain. Second half was a lot better with Roy Dale Williams. If they can keep that going, then again, you get Milroe in the third and short situations, and I think that's a little bit easier for him, especially if he can run and convert those third downs.
Mike, I love what I see when Justice Haynes carries the football. I just don't see him. Is that related to the injury he suffered at the end of August? Or is he just not picking up blitzes?
Injury-wise, no. I mean, he was it was a pretty brief thing. It was a quad contusion, I think, the third week of August. I missed that second scrimmage. But he's really been fine ever since. In fact, people have brought that up with his dad, you know, Verron Haynes, the former NFL running back, on Twitter. And his dad's responded to those people and has said, no, like, his son is fine. He's healthy. And his dad's been a little bit chirpy, you might say, on Twitter, in terms of, you know, other people asking him why is Justice Haynes not playing, and the dad will say, you know, it's a great question, you know, I'm not sure myself. So, you know, that's one where I think Nick Saban's aware of sort of the risk, and in this day and age of college football, if you have a great player like that, or, you know, five-star talent, and he doesn't play as a freshman, there's more of a track record these days of those players leaving. And I think he gets that. Saban gets that. And we've heard, I think it was Wednesday night when Saban was asked about Justice Haynes, said, I think we're going to see him more as the season goes on. So, you know, I think they've liked, maybe not loved, what they've gotten out of McClellan and Roydell Williams so far. Like I said, it's been up and down. The offensive line probably plays a role in that. But even if those guys continue to be what they are, which is, you know, pretty reliable seniors, they still have to find a way to get Haynes involved and at least see what he can do. Because again, I do think if that continues to go where he's not playing, and you know, I think the blitz pickup thing could certainly be part of it. Then in this day and age of college football, you risk losing those players.
Mike, you obviously watch this team very closely. Early in the game tomorrow, what are you going to be looking at to see if Alabama is going to come out and just sort of play a different game than what we saw last week?
Yeah, I think it's going to be the running game on both sides. You know, I think if Ole Miss can kind of get things rolling in that area, and they did to a certain extent last year. You might remember, you know, Alabama went down 10-0 to Ole Miss, you know, in Oxford last year, and they ran the ball pretty well that day. If Ole Miss can get the ball rolling and kind of use tempo, get the chains moving, then that's going to be a problem for the defense. And, you know, on offense for Alabama, it's the same thing. Yeah, there's a lot of third and long situations for Tyler Buchner in that South Florida game. Obviously, he did not handle them well. He did not play well, did not look great. But he was put in some pretty tough situations because the running game, more often than not, on the early downs was not performing very well. And that's something I think will help Milroe a lot if they can get into third and shorts, because that opens up the possibility of Milroe being able to scramble. And it's a lot harder to scramble for a first down on 3rd and 9 or 3rd and 11 than it is when it's 3rd and 3. The defense has to be covering a lot more on 3rd and 3, because Milroe can just tuck it, run forward for 4 yards pretty quickly, and that's a first down. And that's harder to defend. So it starts with the running game on both sides.
We talk and criticize Alabama so much because, quite honestly, it's worthy, you know. But how about the defense? How do you expect them to play? Because Kiffin's going to bring it, and he's pointing at this game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's another game where I don't know how much pressure they're going to be able to get in terms of sacks, because I think the ball's going to come out quickly with Jackson Dart. Obviously, they're going to be running a lot of plays. It's going to be keeping Alabama's personnel on the field. You know, guys are going to get tired. That's just sort of something they need to deal with a tempo team like this. And, you know, it's a case still of, can those guys in the back end communicate the call and not have someone under the wrong page when you're running so fast like that? And, you know, especially sometimes it's that far cornerback when he's on the far side of the field and he can't see the call on the other sideline. He has 5 seconds to get lined up and do what he needs to do. Sometimes Alabama's been caught in bad situations with that. You know, they certainly did against Tennessee last year. So that's a big part of it. And, yeah, I think Lane probably looked at the film from what Steve Sarkisian did against Caleb Downs, and I think he was probably looking to attack these safeties, too, and get them into conflict situations. So, you know, Lane's obviously really good coordinator. He's had some good games against Alabama. The 2020 game was his best. Last year, I think, was pretty good. Yeah. And 2021 was a flop. Remember, they came in undefeated, and Lane had the popcorn comment before the game, and they just completely flopped. So, you know, there's been a wide range of outcomes for Lane. And again, that kind of contributes to me to the whole idea of, like, I don't know what to expect from this game a lot more than others.
I love the flavor he brings to the SEC. I hope he stays around for a long, long time. Mike, tell everybody where they can find you and what you're working on.
Yeah, on Bama247.com, on Twitter, at Mike Rodak, and just working on trying to get healthy for tomorrow.
Well, we hope you can get over to Bryant-Denny Stadium and that you feel better, and we thank you for taking time, illness and all, to join us on Big Noon Sports, and we'll probably do this again next week. Thank you again, Mike.
You got it. Thank you.
All right. You bet. And again, we are live from Innisfree right here on the boulevard on, you know, University. So come on down and have a cold beer or drink. What did you say they made? Did they make some kind of wacky martini or something? What were you talking about earlier?
wrong place.
Okay. Well, yeah. Wrong place, good attitude. All right. Come down and join us, though. They've got all kinds of brews, and they can make the concoction of your delight, whatever you do. Just come on down and see us. As Lars and Laura Lee and I will continue to bring you Big Noon Sports until 2 o'clock, live from Innis Free.
It's the Tide 100.9 30K Workday Payday.
Woo!
Win cash every weekday 8 to 5. Here's this hour's cash code.
145. Again, that's 145. The code is 145.
Enter that code now on the Tide 100.9 app. Click on the 30K Payday button and enter the code for a chance to win $30,000.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
If you hear us giggling, there's a really good reason. I think for about the 15th time, I watched Stephen A. Smith throw out the first pitch at the Yankees game. And Lars and I talked about it yesterday. You were nice enough to take me out and grab a beer for my birthday. And we started talking about Stephen A. Smith throwing out the first pitch. You had seen him throw before.
I've been around Stephen A. Years ago, the Spurs were playing, I forget who, in the NBA Finals. And Stephen was a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And so I was covering it for Sports Illustrated. He was there for the Inquirer. And like about 3 hours before the players would come out for their initial warm-ups, they let the media have a run on the court.
Yeah.
And so we divided up into teams, and I was on one team. Stephen A. was on the other. And I was just like, this dude talks about sports for a living.
I've been in similar
situations.
He
had the audacity to, it's pickup ball. It's pickup ball. And at one time down the court, this was when I was a little bit quicker, I actually drove to the hoop. Right?
You?
I did.
You're a three man.
I'm a three man. I'm Steve Kerr. I think I hang out on the wing. I don't venture into where the
and
Giants
are. Let me tell you, folks, I have seen him in person get hot and rip the cords off of it. So, yeah. Lars has got some game.
I can tear it up pretty good. But Stephen A. was guarding me, and he called a charge.
You don't call charges in pickup ball.
I know. Isn't that rule number one? It's cardinal.
You don't call a block or a charge. No. It just isn't done.
No, it's not done. And you know what? You call it on yourself. You call fouls on yourself.
That's absolutely
right.
That's
like, hey, I got him. You got him on the wrist. You know, whatever. It's on me. Foul. And so he did this garbage, and then to try to see him shoot a basketball was just mind-boggling again. And so I told you last night when we were at Baumhauer's in Vestavia, I said, okay, Stephen A. Smith has been talking about throwing out the first pitch at Yankee Stadium for weeks, and he's got, all this swagger. And I'm like, my twin six-year-old girls can throw better than him. Trust me. The dude won't even make it to the plate. Am I exaggerating, Matt?
No. I mean, by the way, Google it. You can just hit Stephen A. Smith throws pitch and you'll see it.
And he bounced it. It was pathetic. It was and then I'm asking myself, and we talked about this too, because I told you this was going to happen, and it is going to undermine his credibility with athletes, because everybody's going to realize that this dude can't throw a frickin' ball, and he's the highest paid sports yapper in the universe.
Well, you can't use a phrase anymore.
He can't throw a ball.
You can't use a phrase anymore, and he throws like a girl, especially in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, with that old ballpark.
I was
going to
say, like,
he throws like Terry Labonte did.
I was going to say he Tyler Bucknered it, but you know what? I think Tyler Buckner, Stephen A. Smithed it.
They got Terry Labonte, who's a NASCAR champion, to throw out one of the first pitches at Arlington. He's a Texas guy. You know this.
Yeah.
And his Texas was Terry. Just a little bit better than what we saw from Stephen A. And so now I just say he throws like a NASCAR driver instead of.
And
you know,
so Stephen A.
Getting into a gender issue.
He's just name dropping left and right, saying that Derek Jeter was giving him advice. And that brought me back to 2001.
Even wore his jersey number.
I know. Going back to 2001, though, when President Bush came to Yankee Stadium after 9/11 to throw out the first pitch. And George W. Bush is a hell of an athlete.
Yes.
And there is a pitcher's mound pitching facility underneath Yankee Stadium. And President Bush, he was actually a little bit nervous, not because he couldn't throw a strike, but because they made him wear all this protective gear. Yeah. And Derek Jeter goes down there and is watching the president warm up. And the president's like, "What do you think?" And Jeter's like, "Don't mess it up. They'll boo you."
Oh, God. They were going to boo him anyway. Well, after 9/11,
No. This was, I think, to me, just symbolically, the two greatest moments of Bush's presidency were, one, when he got on top of the rubble at the World Trade Center and got the bullhorn and said, "We're going to take those dudes down." Right?
He said, "We're going to get them folks."
Yeah.
Very Texas
draw. It was like just a show of strength that the country needed. And the second greatest moment, again, symbolically, George W. Bush gets out on the mound and he just rips a fastball right down the center. I mean,
go America.
That's like, it was so wonderful because that's our president. That's our president.
And he's
just absolutely
crushed
it in the moment. And then Stephen A. Smith, he blamed it on the fact that he'd never been on a mound before.
Well, that's even worse. Then don't throw it.
Well, of course he'd been on a mound before.
Laurie, I'm going to go get you an orange from behind the counter, and I want you to knock that stack of cups over from right here.
Well,
something tells me you can probably throw a ball.
Yeah, I can throw a ball.
Oh, weren't you a gymnast?
Well, yes.
So you have athleticism, isn't it?
But I also played softball, not here at Alabama, but I was a catcher. So
best position in
sports.
I had
to throw the ball. Yeah, and we get a lot of action. But my nephew was a college pitcher. So growing up and everything, we would throw the ball until it got too much for my hand. He's throwing heat, and I'm like, I can't catch you anymore.
Well, with my girls, I taught them right from as soon as they basically could stand. Step and throw.
And follow
Step
through.
Step and throw and follow through. Yeah. Okay, but Matt Coulter, of the three of us up here, you're the only one that has actually thrown an opening pitch off of a mound.
Yep.
And so give us your experience.
First of all, I don't care if you're Stephen A. Smith or Derek Jeter or the president. You're going to get a little nervous because you don't want to pull a Stephen A. Smith. And it was
need to make that into a verb. Stephen A. Smithed it.
Pulled a Stephen A. It was back when I was at 13, and so I had a suit on because I anchored the 6 and I was going to go back for the 10. So I went out there, and I was in a full suit. But I played some baseball now.
Yes,
you know that.
Yes, a lot. You're very good.
I God blessed me with a few tools. That's about it. But one of them was throwing. But I went in the bullpen and I warmed up. I was not going to one hop it. And I didn't mess around. I just got up there and just threw about a 50 mile an hour fastball. It was right there in the strike zone. Boom. And boy,
that was
a sense
the first
of relief.
Time.
Yeah. I did it the second time. I tried to put a little juice on it and it hit the dirt right behind the plate and the catcher didn't like that very much. So But, you know, it's fun. It's a great experience. Everybody should do it. I love it when they get little kids up there.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how they throw. They're cute.
But yeah, no.
Stephen A. You know, from now on, I'm not going to say.
Fail. Epic
throws,
fail.
I'm not going to say he throws like a NASCAR car. I'm going to say he throws like Stephen A.
But then it got me thinking, and I'll start with you, Laura Lee. What is the greatest sort of athletic failure of your life? I know, and if you don't have one, that's good. But, I mean, I have one that is still vivid in my mind from when I was 17 years old.
All right, we're going to get to this at the bottom of the hour. We need to take a break, but I want you to think about it.
You need to think about it.
About it, and yep. I know mine. Won't take long to tell it either. But if we can take our break now, when we come back, I think you've probably read that the late Ken Stabler's ring, Hall of Fame ring from the NFL, is going to be presented to his family Sunday night. His oldest and dearest friend, and one of mine as well, Dan Jenkins, is going to join us, and he'll fill in the blanks on that. And, man, if anybody knows Stabler stories, it's Dan Jenkins. That's coming up on Big Noon Sports. By the way, let me just note that the game day menu is sitting right in front of me. Innisfree Irish Pub. I got the James Joyce burger 2 in a row. Are you going chicken wrap? Do you know yet?
I'm going chicken Caesar wrap. Yeah, I'm going 3 in a row because I love it so much.
You went to meeting 3 last week, didn't you?
I did.
Is that sausage good?
It was.
Delicious. All right. Hey, come down here and see for yourself or taste for yourself at Innisfree. We're broadcasting Big Noon Sports until 2.
Hi. Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather. A warm afternoon, the sky partly to mostly sunny, the high 85. Fair tonight, the low 63. Tomorrow, a sunny, warm day, the high 87. And Sunday, partly sunny, a few spots could see a passing afternoon shower, the high 86. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 86 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
And the crowd continues to grow, but we've got a table or a bar stool for you right here at Innisfree Irish Pub. Drop by and grab a burger and a cold beer and join us, and we will broadcast until 2, but certainly they're open until like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. So you can come by here today or tomorrow or on Sunday and enjoy yourself at Innisfree Irish Pub. We'll be here every Friday during the football season. Our next guest is Dan Jenkins, and Dan and I have been friends, I guess, since the 80s. When I first met him and Ken Stabler doing the old World League of American Football. And I met Dan and got to know him, and we have been really pretty close friends ever since. Dan, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. How about you?
Hey, we're at a bar. We're having some food.
Imagine that.
Yeah, imagine me being
stop the presses. Hey,
tell everybody what's going to happen Sunday night. It's long overdue, much as was the case in Ken getting into the NFL Hall of Fame. But just tell us what's going to happen for Snake Sunday night.
Sunday night, I got a call from Kendra, Kenny's oldest daughter, and they're going to present, you know, the NFL, they had a policy, you know, when they give the, you know, induction into the NFL Hall of Fame, they would not give the family, you know, the person was deceased that was going in, they wouldn't give them the jacket and the Super Bowl ring. You know, they had the bust, you know, in the Hall of Fame. But they changed the policy, and now they're going to present Kendra, Kenny's oldest daughter, and her family with the ring of excellence that they give all the players in the Hall of Fame. They're going to present that at halftime on the Raiders-Steelers game. It's coming Sunday night. It's on NBC. I think it comes on about 7:15 Central, but they'll do that presentation at halftime.
What does this mean to Ken Stabler's family?
Oh, that means a lot to them. They wanted to see him go in the Hall of Fame. And Kenny, you know, he said, hey, if I go in, fine. If I don't, fine. You know, he was just, you know. I mean, you know, it meant a lot to him, but he didn't let it get him down, you know what I'm saying. And his family, you know, they're so proud of him. And so I am, too, happy for him, you know. I was just long overdue.
Yeah, and all of it is, but at least it's being done, and that's huge.
That's
I want
right.
You've told me, and I've actually experienced some Stabler stories, and as you might expect, they're fascinating. He was just a wonderful human being, had time for everybody. And you know this, when we were traveling abroad, people would walk all the way across the street just to get a picture made with him, and he encouraged it. He embraced it. That was always cool. But one of the funniest stories you ever told me was about, I guess it happened more than once, several times, about your lodging in a hotel. Could you share that with me? Because I lost it when you told me.
Oh, yeah. When travel with Kenny, sometimes we would have, sometimes if they had extra rooms, they would give me a room, they'd give Kenny a room. And we were doing Monday Night Football for Harris in New Orleans when they were first. They had a temporary casino open, but we would do Monday Night Football over there for them. And we'd stay 1 week, would be at the Royal Sonesta, the next week at the Chateau Sonesta. And anyway, when Kenny, every morning, he would get up in the morning, he'd make his bed up in the hotel room. And
just wait.
Anyway, hang on, they were interrupting me here. Anyway, Kenny would get up in the morning, he'd make up his bed in the hotel room. And if we were sharing a room, you know, my bed, when I got up, I left it, looked like a train wreck, you know. And I never thought anything about it, you know. And we had to share that room, Kenny's room, you know, his bed is all made up. Mine is like a train wreck. And the maid comes in there and she's thinking, crap, they slept in the same bed. No. Oh, God. I never thought anything about it until after he passed the question. Crap, how did that look now?
Oh, God. Always a prankster.
Why is it? This is for both Dan and Matt here. And Matt, I'll start with you. Why is it that Ken Stabler still sort of lives in our imagination? What was it about him that made him just so memorable?
First of all, he's a hell of a football player and a really good baseball player. And for that alone, he's embraced by Alabama fans, run through the mud in the Iron Bowl back in 65, 66. Dan, maybe he'll clear that up.
The holy roller.
The NFL, they've changed the rules. It's a Stabler rule. But the other part of it is he just embraced people. He loved being around people, and people love being around him.
Dan?
Yeah, he really loved his fans, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, can you think of an incident where he went above and beyond? I know when we were in Europe, we were traveling around. I shouldn't have been amazed, but people in London would walk over there in a Pittsburgh Steelers shirt and ask for his autograph.
Yeah. No, we flew into El Paso, Texas one time. We got off the plane. He was doing an appearance with these people there in El Paso, and we got off the plane. There's probably 500 Oakland Raiders fans in the airport, all dressed up, face painted silver and black, and all the media's out there and everything. You know, in El Paso, Texas, I'm like, golly, sure a lot of Raider fans and cowboy country here, you know. But he stood there and he would sign autographs until everybody got the autograph and the picture. He wouldn't leave, you know. And that's the way he was. You know, another funny story, Henry Pitts was Kenny's agent at the time, and in Selma, Alabama, Kenny had an appearance to do in Selma, so Henry took care of all the logistics and everything, and we were checking in the hotel there in Selma, and we were walking in, and these people saw Kenny, and they stopped him, and, you know, wanted his autograph and pictures and talk football and everything, and I said, Kenny, I'm going to go ahead and check in. So I went to the front desk, checked in, went up to the room. They had a giant suite, you know, with all the big basket of fruit and cheese and wines and all these, you know, unbelievable. And I'm thinking, boy, that's sure nice of Henry. Henry Pitts really did a good job here, you know. So Kenny calls and says, come on down and get a drink. Well, I'm sitting up there for an hour. You know, I drank one of the bottles of wine. I started on the second one. I drank half the other bottle of wine. I ate all the cheese and everything. And Kenny says, let's go get a drink. I said, no, come on up here and get one. You know, because I had the wine. He said, no, come on down to my room. So I went down to his room. He was in the regular room. And they had put me in Kenny's suite. And I ate all the cheese, drank all the wine. Golly. Yeah. He wasn't going to leave those people. He's going to sign their autographs, do all the pictures and all that. But after about an hour of that, I was getting hungry and thirsty. So I thought Henry gave us each a sweet. You know?
Could
I was wrong.
Could Ken Stabler have been drafted to a more perfect franchise than the Oakland Raiders? When I think of the Raiders and this renegade outlaw sort of symbolism that they represented or that they embodied, I think of John Matuszak, Ted Hendricks, Lala Zedo, and the only offensive player I think of is Kenny Stabler.
Maybe Cliff Branch.
Lester Hayes.
Dan, I'll let you go in a minute, but you've traveled with him a lot, and I traveled with him in Europe and in Canada. And, you know, Stabler, he used to like to wear black. I mean, he'd wear a black coat, black pants, and a black shirt. And he had that flopping gray, white hair coming over his collar, and he had that Stabler gait the way he'd walk down through the airports.
Did he just not care what people thought of him in his lifestyle?
I think he cared to a certain extent. What do you think?
Yeah, he just kind of marched to his beat of his own drum. You know, he stayed up late. You know, we had a lot of late hours. And, you know, we would just listen to music, listen to the jukebox, talking football to whoever's in the little bar there.
But he would walk through the airport.
You know, and then, you know, go play football.
He'd walk through the airports in that all black with that kind of funky look he had. And when we got out of, the United States and we were traveling, you get in the line to go through TSA or whatever it was. It's very different in other countries. You know this. Who's the first person they pulled out of line to check every single time? And Kenny would go over to the other line and the entire team would be lined up going through the regular part. And he'd just be up there smiling and laughing his butt off. Always a pleasure catching up with you. Give my best to Gail.
I sure will.
Casino money.
Yeah, this is kind of my retirement plan here.
That cruises.
I don't know how that's going to work.
Seems to be working okay, Dan. Yeah, thanks for your time.
All right, thank you so much, man.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And tune in and make sure and watch Sunday night. I hope, who carries the Sunday night? Is that NBC?
Yeah.
I get kind of confused, especially when they call Monday night football on Thursday night, and then Thursday night football is Monday night football on Wednesday.
And you have to have Prime to watch it on Thursday. What is your favorite? And because you worked with Ken, you traveled across the world with Kenny Stabler. When you think of him now, maybe not your favorite story, but what like first jumps to your mind when I say Ken Stabler?
He had such a big heart. I mean, and he was so genuine. Let me tell you, you know this. He was a flipping blast to be around. And if you were around, you weren't paying for anything. If Kenny was with you, it was always on the house. Somebody sending drinks and shots and beers. And at one particular place in Montreal, they sent him something rather unusual, which I won't get to.
There's so many professional athletes who get alligator arms when the check arrives.
And they're making
stuff. Dale Earnhardt Jr., man. I don't think he's ever paid for anything when he's been with me.
It was always on Sports Illustrated.
Or Lars Anderson. Or Lars. Yeah.
That's funny.
Like, come on, Dale.
And Laura Lee's always struck me as funny as to go, oh, look, there's Ken Stabler. Or there's who? Who was it? Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Dale, yeah.
Let me buy him a drink. Well, wait a minute. And should it be the other way around?
Right.
All right, have you come up with
Ken Stabler,
a possible favorite?
He's talking about athletic failures.
Yes.
This is going to sound bad, but I didn't.
I'm going to hold it through the break.
I didn't a lot.
Oh, you didn't have? Well, that doesn't surprise me. No.
Well, I think one of the biggest things for me was that I always strive to be the best, and I did whatever I had to do to be number one. And, you know, that serves you in life in the future, but it also kind of is a hindrance sometimes. So
that clearly spills over to your business, and let's talk about that on the other side.
Yeah,
Matt.
Let's take a break. Let's order some food. We're going to do all of that, and by the way, please join us. We are live, Big Noon Sports at Innisfree, right here in University. Everybody knows where Innisfree is because everybody likes to come here and have himself a cold Irish beer or two. So join us. We'll be here till 2. Of course, they'll be open all weekend for all you Bama fans. And I just saw a couple Ole Miss fans come in here. So we got some folks already in town from Oxford, and we'll be right back. Big Noon Sports.
Built to win.
Touchdown, Alabama!
Built for championships.
Throws intercepted, Alabama!
Built by Bama.
Alabama is still Alabama.
The Crimson Tide play here. Join us Saturday as the Crimson Tide kick off SEC play against Ole Miss. Our coverage begins at 11:30 on your home for Alabama football.
Brought to you by Birmingham Racecourse. BirminghamRacecourse.com. You can be a winner too.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
It is Big Noon Sports. It's Friday, so guess where we are? Innisfree. It's a place to be. Come by, have a cold beer. They've got 40-plus different selections here. Of course, you want something with a bourbon or a vodka or a tequila, they've got that for you as well. And just a great menu. What did you end up ordering? What'd you go with? What? Let me see which we got here. You just went straight burger? Which one? Which poet?
The George Shaw burger. It has barbecue sauce and sauteed onions on it. That's my kind of thing. And cheese. Always must have cheese.
Always what?
Have cheese on the burger.
Oh, yeah. I just it's not the same without it. What about you?
I went for the grilled chicken Caesar wrap. Third week in a row.
Yeah.
So good.
I went off my norm because I've been getting the burger, but I ordered the Windy City hot dog. You ever had a really good Chicago hot dog?
Yeah.
They're great.
I want to hit that Reuben hot dog because the Reuben was invented in Nebraska. Everything goes back to Nebraska.
Especially volleyball. Unfortunately, not much football. I'm just kidding. Actually, they beat Northern Illinois. They beat the Huskies, didn't they?
Yeah, and they covered. I made a lot of money.
You did?
I can't say that about Alabama last week.
Did it make up for the first 3 weeks? Laura Lee, what are you doing? What have you done this week as far as your job is concerned?
Negotiated contracts, repairs. People are still buying. The great thing about it, as the interest rates continue to creep up a little bit, sellers are a little bit more negotiable.
They're more willing to make repairs. They're maybe more willing to help with closing costs, so that's great for buyers. And with less buyers out there, there's less competition. So it's a great time to buy a house. I keep saying it over and over, is when the rates come down, then the prices of the houses will go straight back up. You're going to be competing with a lot of buyers that are sitting on the sidelines, and it's going to ultimately cost you more because houses have not gone down in value. They're remaining stable, if not creeping higher. So it's a good time to buy.
Laura Lee, walk me through the process. Pretend I'm a first-time home buyer, and I approach you. I tell you my budget is I can afford maybe a $300,000 house. What happens after that?
You know, that's a good place to be in Tuscaloosa because that's around our average price. Of course, we have a lot higher and a lot lower, but we're going to talk about the process. We're going to talk about the paperwork. We're going to talk about expectations, and that's coming from my side. And then from you as the buyer, I'm going to ask you what is it that you want? What are your must-haves? What is negotiable? So everybody has a dream about what they want, but let's talk about what's available in that price range, because not everything you may want. Are you going to get a five-bedroom, four-bath house on an acre of land for $300 in Tuscaloosa? No, you're not. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what you can get at $300. And that's what I do with my first-time home buyers when I talk about managing expectations. Let's look at your budget. Let's stay within your budget. And let's go find the best house available for you.
I found Lars's house on the way over here.
Yeah.
So you can do it in Birmingham, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What are you? Are you limited? I mean, because...
No, I'm licensed in the state of Alabama, so anywhere.
Are you still looking for me, by the way?
Yes.
No look.
Well, you know,
I'm looking on Lake
let's
Tuscaloosa.
Talk about managing expectations and what your price range is.
Well,
and
well, you said you want to act like a home buyer. Go ahead, do the real thing. No, just kidding. I don't want you put you in that situation. But anyway,
I can't live on Nick Saban Street. Put it that way.
You want to live? Don't you live near him? I shouldn't say that. Never mind.
Yeah.
Don't answer that question. Okay? Answer this one. Yeah. How do folks get in touch with Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker?
Well, you can always call me at Advantage Realty, and a great company to work with. A lot of great agents there. You can also find me on social media at the Bama Broker. You can email me. You can also go to my website, thebamabroker.com.
I'm amazed. And Lars and I talked about this first time we met with you, that the Bama Broker hadn't been taken.
Right.
So you are the Bama, the one and only Bama
right.
Broker.
Right.
Makes it perfect. What are your plans for the game tomorrow?
Well, of course, we'll go early to the stadium and get in there before the crowds and enjoy the game. And then my dad's cooking dinner, so we're going back to his house to watch some more football.
What's your dad cooking? What's a game day?
He has not told me, but let me tell you, my dad's one of the best cooks. I mean, he's...
Can you set two more places?
Yes.
I'm just kidding.
Actually, my sister and brother-in-law won't be there, so there it
well,
will be
I
extra food.
Really, I said that purely on fun. But anyway.
All right, we got a caller?
Oh, yeah. So thanks for reminding me. I'm getting a little ditzy here as a result of my birthday party. Let's go to Macon, Georgia. George, what's up?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing? Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Yeah, y'all are talking about Eddie Saban. He's one of my favorite Alabama quarterbacks because I can remember back in the day a quick Kenny Saban story. I don't know if y'all remember. I think it was 64 or 65.
You know, he was a sophomore, and so they put him in against Tennessee, and he was supposed to drive him down. And everybody in the stadium, they had the downs incorrect on the field and also on the scoreboard. And he thought it was third down, and it was fourth down, and he threw the ball away. Well, obviously, Tennessee took over on downs, and, you know, he was the quarterback, and I'm sure he was down in his luck and feeling. But we, you know, rushed, you know, we got on the field because that was back when it was in Legion Field. It was easy to see, you know, they didn't separate you that much, and he signed me an autograph, and he was very gracious. And through the years, there's not a Alabama fan that Kenny Stabler didn't like. And another thing that's very interesting, Don Sutton lost two games in high school. You know who the opposing pitcher was?
It was Snake. He was a heck of a – in fact, he was drafted by the Yankees. He could have played either one.
Absolutely.
He was seriously a good pitcher.
And I, you know, that's very interesting to me. And something else that really gets me, you know, like I say, I've been an Alabama follower since 1960-61. But everybody says, oh, it's Snake because he's a quick striker. No, it's because he would run like in a coil of a snake. You know, he run 40 yards to get 5 yards. But he was one heck of an athlete, one heck of a great person. I mean, there was not an Alabama fan that he did not like. And I always go through the story. They asked Bear Bryant what would Kenny do if he ran the option, and he would always say, you got to put another digit on the scoreboard.
One of my favorite
quarterbacks and Alabama players, because he always had time for you, no matter what he was doing. And that's kind of my Kenny Stabler story.
That's really good and well told. And George, you are absolutely one of our favorite callers. You have been watching Alabama football, studying Alabama football for a long, long time. What are your expectations for what is going to happen? And using clear eyes, not through crimson-colored glasses here, but clear eyes, what do you think is going to transpire on Saturday?
Well, obviously, I've been taught by Bear Bryant and also all the other coaches that coach Alabama to show the opposition great respect. But I'm a little bit nervous, but I just can't believe. Okay, here's what I think. I hear Nick Saban talk about what an offensive coordinator is supposed to do and what they should do. Knowing what the defense, attack their weaknesses, use your strength. And Tyler Reese just has not done that, and I don't understand it, but I'm hoping that he'll wake up, or maybe he's trying to fool us all, that we will run the ball with Milroe more, and also run the ball, you know, between the tackles, and also use jet sweeps, and also, you know, go from sideline to sideline to weaken up the middle. And I think we'll do it, and I think we'll be successful to do it. So I think the offense is going to be much better than what we think it's going to be. Because remember, guys, we were beating Texas going into the fourth quarter playing like crap. So yeah. What would happen if we just play a little bit better than decent? And our defense, I think, is going to be much more stiffer. So I'm thinking that we will probably score about 4 touchdowns and a field goal and hold them to 17 points. I think we're going to win. But I'm not the type of person who goes out there and says these things, because I hate to eat crow. And I was talking to one of my buddies. I said, when did it get popular to talk trash and not worry about what you're saying, even if you lose? You know, I was taught, you know, don't talk, but do. But I'm thinking, you know, that's what I'm going to say, 31-17 or 31-14. I think we're going to handle them. I can't imagine us not being able to handle them, because we still have better talent than them.
George, if Alabama's defense holds Ole Miss under 20, I will almost guarantee you that win. George, you know what you are? You're the Ken Stabler of callers. We appreciate you phoning in today.
Okay, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you, George.
Roll Tide. What a good guy.
Yeah.
You know, there are a few things, I guess it's kind of operated under the radar other than Alabama football and Stephen A. Smith. And I want to bring them up in a minute and get your thoughts on a couple of things, yours as well, Laura Lee.
And also, I want to get your guys' just predictions of how everything's going to play out tomorrow afternoon, about a quarter of a mile from where we're sitting right now.
That's Laura Lee.
She knows all.
Hey, let's take our final break of Big Noon Sports and invite you once again to come by and see us at Innisfree. And, you know, while you're on your app, your Tide 100.9 app, go for your cash code. Go for $30,000. Let's get that right. Just go to the app and type in 145. That's the code for this hour. You only have just a few more minutes. We'll give you a new one at the top of the hour as you listen to Big Noon Sports live from Innisfree.
Coming up on The Game with Ryan Fowler.
Coming up on the Friday edition of The Game, we'll do SEC Parlay Pick Contest. We'll feature Rodney Orr, TiderInsider.com. We'll feature Lee Sterling, Paramount Sports, Brent Beard, First Coast News in Jacksonville, Florida. We'll get you ready for Alabama Ole Miss right here starting at 2 o'clock on The Game on Tide 100.9, the home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
The longest running sports program in Tuscaloosa, The Game with Ryan Fowler, weekdays from 2 to 6 p.m. on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Hey, Mark.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather. A warm afternoon, the sky partly to mostly sunny, the high 85. Fair tonight, the low 63. Tomorrow, a sunny, warm day, the high 87. And Sunday, partly sunny, a few spots could see a passing afternoon shower, the high 86. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 87 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
And we're live, and we will be every Friday throughout the Alabama football schedule at Innisfree, the Irish pub. Drop by and have a cold beer, a hot dog, or a beer. They got a great menu, a very varied selection. All right, this just in. Thank you, Audio Bob, for bringing this up. He's just the messenger, though, okay, folks? Bryce Young has been injured and ruled out at least for this coming game Sunday against the Seattle Seahawks. And that means the Red Rifle, Andy Dalton, will get the start. So that's tough news for Carolina and tough news for the number one draft pick out of the University of Alabama. But he is out. Man, we're getting some injuries in the NFL, Lars, that are just, I mean, Chubb, did you read that injury is to the main, vein?
It's a possible career ender.
Yeah.
It's horrible. Horrible.
Damn. Who else did we lose? Diggs?
You just mentioned Diggs, yeah.
Diggs is out for the year, isn't he?
Highest paid corner in the league. He tore his ACL in practice yesterday.
What about Burrow? What's the latest on him?
Well, there's video of him in full pads walking up a hill.
So
he's definitely ready to play in an NFL game with a calf.
Doesn't every player do that?
A calf strain.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how serious of an injury that is to a quarterback, because it lingers and you aggravate it, and you absolutely, you know, the power of your throws comes from your legs, especially if it's your right calf and you're right-handed. You're going to push off of that, and that muscle is your calf. It all comes from your calf. And so Burrow is lacking velocity on his throws, and it's just it's not something that's going to end his career or anything, and he can play through it most likely, but it really limits his effectiveness.
Did you ever get injured? You were pretty active with softball.
Oh, yes.
Gymnastics, it seemed
gymnastics
to me like.
Gymnastics, and I cheered.
Did you ever fall off top of a pyramid?
I didn't fall off, no, but I've been dropped from double stunts and
I really think people don't understand how many injuries cheerleaders suffer.
Ankles, yes.
That's the big one?
Oh, yes. Because you're coming from a very high up, and when I was in high school, I was always on top of the pyramid, and because I did gymnastics, I would do backflips off and sort of thing. And that was a long time ago, but yeah, and you're landing on the basketball court.
Can you still do a backflip?
At pep rallies and that stuff. Do I what?
Can you still do a backflip?
Oh, right off the
like
table.
A tumble run.
Right off
like,
her
can
stage.
You, like, what is the, what could you do gymnastics wise, now? When you, as opposed to when you were in your peak?
Well, I haven't done like a round off back tuck in a long time, but I did when I was doing CrossFit a couple of years ago do some back handsprings.
Oh, wow.
You know, I was trying to.
That's impressive.
I'm lucky to get up the hill.
Yeah, I'm lucky to get out of bed.
I still got it. I just don't do it.
Oh.
Well, anyway,
let's break it down. Lars, you said you were going to get our opinions, but we're going to start with you. You got 60 seconds on the clock. What happens tomorrow afternoon, 2:30 throughout the afternoon in Bryant-Denny Stadium?
I've never seen a Nick Saban-led team lay a dud 3 games in a row. I think they're going to come out and play very, very well. I think they're going to play the best game of the season. I think you're going to see renewed confidence from Jalen Milroe. I think Tommy Reese is going to tinker the offensive play calling. Again, you can't revolutionize the offense. You kind of are who you are at this point, but you can be selective in the plays that you call. They're going to put him in position to succeed, and I think Jalen is going to play very, very well, and I think Alabama is going to win by about 10 points.
Marley.
Well, I hope all of that is true, and if all of that happens like we want it to, I would also like to see our defense do what they did last week, which was get a fumble and an interception.
Yeah.
So let's get some more takeaways and take those in, get some pick sixes.
Matt, you and I talked about that earlier, Matt, about winning the turnover battle and also, Laura Lee, special teams. Kool-Aid. Kool-Aid, Kool-Aid, Kool-Aid. Time to make a big play.
Tell you what, though, I don't know if there's a better kick punt combination in the nation.
Well, we're better than they are in that aspect. Their punter has, Ole Miss's punter has had some issues. So
it's like the world is upside down, right? That the special teams are the strength of Alabama's team.
Remember 5 or 6 years ago, Alabama just couldn't make a field goal. It didn't matter if it was 31 or 51. It's very troubling times.
Yeah.
That is not the case now, because I think both these guys are going to be playing on Sundays.
Yes, absolutely.
And with the lack of offense at times during football games, having a punter like Burnett that can just absolutely put it inside the 5, that's big time. That's Gene Stallings.
All right, so how do you see this game unfolding, Matt?
Well, I hope we see an offense that is, I'm going to pretty much mirror what y'all just said. I hope to see an offense that is suited for Jalen Milroe. And I want to see some really true RPOs. We've seen forms and fashions, right? But not the real deal. I want it to almost be like an option offense. Don't you think? We talked about this all week.
Come out in the bone.
I wish they'd come out in the wishbone. Did you? You were in school when they were running the wishbone. Well, no, you weren't yet.
No, I was not.
Because they stopped running it in 83.
No, she was in grade school.
Yeah. You were in school.
Preschool.
It was, and you grew up in Nebraska where they ran the Veer, which is an option, and then just another state over watching Oklahoma run the wishbone with Jack Mildren. God.
Thomas Lott, Elvis Peacock. Yeah.
Lott, the one that first started wearing the do-rag.
Yeah. Yeah, the bandana.
Did you ever hear the story about a very, very famed and talented running back at the University of Alabama named Lenny Patrick? Now, I am really dating myself, but when he was brilliant and he was on and he was focused, We didn't have a better running back. But he saw Thomas Lott playing on Saturday, and then Monday he came out with a do-rag on. And he was running across the field with his helmet under his arm. Coach Bryant said, "Hey, Lenny, come here." I said, "All right, come on. What's up, Coach?" He says, "What's that on your head?" He said, "It's called a do-rag. I saw Thomas Lott from Oklahoma. He was wearing it at the game the other day. I thought I might try it out." He said, "Lenny, you got a decision to make here. Do-rag, helmet. Do-rag, helmet."
Beautiful.